You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, it's Adam. This is The Conversation. I hope and pray this finds you well here on this end. I'm coming off of a week of vacation, and so I am rested, filled up, and excited about what God has in store for this summer. And speaking of summer, and I know I'm going to sound like a pastor here for a second, speaking of summer, I want to encourage you and challenge you to make church a priority. To make it a priority. If you don't have a church, find a church. Make it a priority for yourself, for your kids, for complete strangers that you need to cross paths with and encourage. This is an hour each week where we can hear from God, where we can be renewed, where we can be filled up. I just want to challenge you to make it a priority. This past week, I met with a dad who's got an adult son who's really struggling right now, and the dad was in tears, and he told me, I only wish that I would have made church a priority. I put sports and school before, and looking back now, I only wish I could change that. So that's my word of encouragement for you. In today's episode, I sat down with legendary pastor Chris Hodges. You are about to be encouraged. We talk about things like mental health and depression, and he shares just practical wisdom on how to battle anxiety and depression in our lives. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. That's it. Chris, want to welcome you to the podcast today as someone who's looked up to you as a pastor, leader, author, preacher for years. Honored to sit down with you today.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. So I want to jump right into your newest book, which before we even started recording, you said it's probably one of your most vulnerable books that you've written. Kind of share heartbeat of the book, why the book as a whole. Start there.
Well, actually, the idea for the book came from when there was kind of a rash of pastoral suicides. I didn't know any of these pastors, but it impacted me like I knew them. And I don't know, I got grieved in my spirit. I thought, what in the world is going on? And so I actually put together a message for our church on the topic of depression. Honestly, in 38 years of ministry, I'd never even studied the topic, even from a theological or biblical standpoint. And of course, I went to the story of Elijah when he had this great victory in one chapter and six verses later is ready to die. That kind of became the impetus. Well, the message that I preached that weekend became the most rewatched message times a lot. And I realized I'd struck a nerve. So those are really important indicators for me, is that when that happens, there's some kind of, when I'm watching the people respond that kind of way, it makes me want to go a little bit deeper. So I actually brought the same message and then tailored it to a pastor's conference that I was speaking at and tailored it to pastors, same response, just over the top, way more than normal kind of a response. And so I just decided to go on a study of it and it's been about 2 years researching and writing this book.
So you kind of touched something close and personal to me. I've known a couple of the pastors really closely who have taken their lives in the last couple of years, and we've done a numerous series as even at our church, and it's been the same thing of the response has been like, I mean, there's no even comparison as far as downloads and listens to these series. Why in general do you think that is the case? Maybe even start there. Why is there that response right now?
Well, honestly, I think because everybody gets depressed from time to time, everybody, you know, because one definition says, It's extreme sadness. There's some anhedonia, which is the things that used to bring you pleasure are no longer pleasurable. You have these loss of concentration and sleep, all this rumination that's going on, alone in our thoughts, more isolated than ever. We are more sedentary than ever. So there's all these things that are contributing to everyone's depression. So 1 out of 9 people in America are on some kind of antidepressant. So you're already touching at least that number of people right now. And they say up to 1 out of 5 have been on some type of antidepressant medication in their lifetime. During 2020, during the pandemic, calls to mental health hotlines went up 900%. in that year. So it's I think it's the number one health issue that we all face, actually. And so the good news is there are some real solutions, and God is not silent on the topic either.
You kind of jump in the story of Elijah. Share how what you learned looking at his story and how he was able to overcome things. Maybe go there.
Well, I actually have had at least three different bouts of depression myself, and I've never considered taking my life. But even what led me to move to Alabama and start our church came out of a season of depression. And it was very similar to Elijah's story. Everything on paper said I should have been the happiest person alive. I was in my home church, paid better than I would have paid me, living the dream. You know, I mean, really, seriously, had a wonderful, still have a wonderful family, miserable, literally miserable. And so what you end up doing is you start faking it. You'll start putting on, especially if you're in ministry. So you have to go in and smile and say, hey, everything's great. And yeah, praise God. Isn't it awesome? When really everything's not awesome. And the most frustrating part to me of depression is when you have it and you don't know how you got there or how to get out. It gets very disorienting. Well, this is what happened to Elijah. He literally had this incredible spiritual victory in 1 Kings 18 when he defeated the prophets of Baal and God consumes this water-soaked sacrifice. And then Jezebel makes a threat. It was just a threat sent by a messenger. So that would be the equivalency of a comment on an Instagram post or a text message, or I heard someone say about you, and all of a sudden he's running for his life, makes a list of terrible decisions, by the way, that added to the depression that are right there in this 1 Kings 19, finds himself under a bush wanting to die. And so he ends up taking this journey through his depression. Again, a lot of mistakes along the way, ends up in a cave. And this is where the process of getting out happened. I think it's interesting, Adam, too, that it was in a cave, because I think a lot of people describe their depression like being
yes,
it's disorienting. It doesn't feel right. Doesn't look right. And then there were clearly five things that he did to get out of the cave. And so a lot of just practical, even secular research in this book about depression, but also giving this strong spiritual story and answers that I hope give people a lot of hope.
Yeah. No, you said so many great things. I think sometimes you will feel depressed and there's a certain situation in your life where you're like, it's because I'm going through a divorce right now, or there's a heavy trial. But it almost in some ways, it's almost worse when everything, like, I don't have anything to complain about. Like, there's actually, I don't have a reason that I can put my finger on, because then I could maybe come to terms rationally. And it almost makes it more discouraging and more of a place to be. Chris, if you'd be willing to share, you kind of mentioned that season of what moved you to where you currently are. Is depression something you still battle with? What does that look like for yourself?
I think depression is something that I tend to battle with, but on a much different way than most people. So again, I never get to the place where I'm ready to take my life. But I've had the disorientation, the darkness, you know, just the blues, really. I don't know how else to say it. It's just, I think I'm feeling blue. And again, the problem is you don't know how you got there or how to get yourself out. One of the greatest discoveries I've found in my research is that most scholars, medical professionals, psychiatrists agree that there's about 9 major causes of depression, of which 2 of them are medical or biological or genetic, when the rest of them are lifestyle related. There are things we're doing to ourselves that we don't even know we're doing to ourselves. Again, our society has become so indoor and sedentary. So we're not moving and we're not experiencing the sun, when clinical research shows that the depression rates are much higher when you're indoors versus outdoors. Something that simple.
Yep.
So to find these and know that 7 out of 9 are something that we can actually fix, I think gives people a lot of hope.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. Before we kind of share, like, okay, what can I do if I am battling depression? One of the things that I apologized the last time we did this series at Embrace, And I said, I apologize for not talking about it even more. And we've done events. We had a close friend of mine, Jared Wilson. We brought his wife in, Julie. She came and shared. We did a night just talking really candidly with her. But I feel like the church hasn't done a great job of talking about it, and almost kind of taken just the pray it away type of approach. And there's power in prayer. I'm a firm believer in prayer. But I think it's kind of tried to throw the Jesus bumper sticker on it in a way that's not, right. not helpful. So Chris, for that person who is struggling, whether it's looking kind of at Elijah or things that just even in research, what would you share to that person?
That it's okay not to be okay. Yeah. That all of us get there. And one of the steps that the church has to take and all of us need to embrace is that there is a stigma around mental illness. So if you tell me your arm, you know, your elbow is sore, you have tendonitis from playing too much tennis, I wouldn't think a bit differently of you, the person. But if I tell you my mind is not right, I think differently of you. Most yeah. people think of that person when the brain is just a part of the body, just like any other part of the body. And just like your elbow can be hurt or your lungs can be sick. Well, and both of you and I are wearing glasses. Nobody thinks yeah. differently about yeah. us just because our eyes aren't, you know, in top shape. But we do have a stigma around mental illness. In fact, that illness becomes the identity. And that's the biggest, I think one of the biggest problems around this topic is your illness does not have become your identity. And if we can feel free to talk about it. So I get real vulnerable in this chapter. I wrote an entire chapter on removing the stigma. And I told my darkest cave story in that chapter to hopefully empower people to say, look, here's a guy who's considered to be, you know, a successful preacher or pastor hey, let me tell you where I got in this dark place. And actually, there's some reveals in that chapter that I've never told anyone that they're going to find out in that chapter. And in the hopes that people could say, you know what? Wow, if he can go through that and if he can be that honest about it, so can I.
Yeah, that's so important. And I even thank Chris before coming on here, just as someone that I look up to and respect so much personally, hearing it from somebody that you look up to of like, hey, this has been something that you've been around the block with as well. There's something powerful about going first. And I just even think about in our own relationships, whether it's you've battled depression or you've battled other things, you know, we're not all called to post it all over Facebook and write a book about it, but there's times when God might encourage us to say, hey, I've been in that situation too. I've struggled with that exact thing. And I just think that's a powerful thing that we can do as followers of Christ. Kind of a unique question for me, Chris. At what point, whether it's depression or our mom's battling cancer or whatever it might be, where is that balance of like trusting God, but also like, hey, going to a physician with this? Even recently in my church, this question has come up a couple different times of like, but I thought God heals people and I thought God does this or that. That's a little bit of a curveball question.
Not really. What's interesting in the Elijah story is he gets visited by an angel to walk him through this five-step process of getting out of the cave. And the first one is the angel says, okay, go get some sleep. Okay, now eat something. Okay, now go sleep. Okay, go eat something. To somebody from Louisiana, that's a foodie. That sounds like a great prescription, right? I love it. Because he never really dealt with it spiritually until he got him healthy first physically. And it says, strengthened by that food, he took the journey. And I think sometimes we just have to nurse ourselves back to some type of health. Like God, we're praying, oh, God, take my depression away. Yeah, but you're staying up until 3 o'clock in the morning watching Netflix. You know, so you're asking God to solve something where your lifestyle is actually adding to that depression, or you've never shared your thoughts. Well, you start getting alone in your thoughts and having some self-talk, and then you're asking God, hey, God, take away this depression. So the very first step, in my opinion, is to actually change our lifestyles to the things that are contributing it that we can control without God intervening.
Yeah.
Now, I still want God. And the second step, by the way, is he had a spiritual encounter with God. And I write about how you can get God involved in your circumstances, in your depression, and how you're thinking about things, and experience him in a powerful way. But it was the second step, not the first.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so important. What things can you control where it's not even, I need to bring this to God. I just need to go to bed. I just need to take care of myself physically. Even for one of the changes that I've wanted to make myself for years, really since my senior year of college, was taking control of my physical health. And that's been one of the positives that's come out of the last year and a half for me. A week into COVID hitting, for some reason, I reached out to a trainer in my church and said, "Hey, would you ever do training virtually?" And he said, "Well, I didn't until a week ago." And I was like, "Really?" And he's like, "Let's do this." And I just even look for me personally, how it's impacted me emotionally and even spiritually. There are some things that we can really tackle that we just need to address. But then there's some other spiritual things where it's like, gosh, this is spiritual. And then even the next step, just medically, of like, hey, there's an imbalance inside of me. And it's wise to talk with a physician. You know, for me, I've had bad knees since high school football. And I've, just like you said, I've never questioned my spiritual level of intensity based on how I've treated my knee and getting it looked at and getting it dealt with. Anything else that you want to say on the topic of depression, Chris?
One of the greatest quotes I have in the book is from someone who said, "We need to stop talking about the chemical imbalances and more about the imbalances in the way we live." So there's a lot of lifestyle imbalances. We don't discount the chemical imbalances. I actually have a son, my youngest of five kids, is on the autism spectrum, and he requires some medical help to kind of, in his words, to put the wires back together, just to connect the wires. I'll never forget the first time he had a dose of what this doctor finally ended up prescribing him. He said, "Dad, for the first time in my life, the wires were connecting." Okay, so I clearly had to see value in the chemical imbalances, but there aren't as many conversations about the imbalances in the way we live. A clinical psychologist told me one of the best ways to reboot your emotions is a routine. When you put structure and routines back into your life, when you have a clarity about why you're alive and can actually structure a week and have some routines. And it's even more important coming out of 2020, because that was one of the things that we were stripped from.
Yes.
Was our routines. We all went into lockdown, and what was already a problem became an enormous problem, because, you know, we weren't waking up and doing something because we were all told to stay home. And now we have to retrain society to have purpose, have schedules, to have routines. And psychiatrists say it reboots your emotions.
Yeah, that is so good. Again, Chris's newest book is called Out of the Cave. We'll have a link in our show notes. Go get a copy. Regardless of who you are or what you do, I know even in my own self, I've definitely struggled a bit with depression and anxiety here and here, but it's definitely a battle that my wife on a different level has fought and really has been vocal about herself. So even if it's not for your own sake, it might be for a family member that you need to pick up this book. It's been so helpful for me to try to understand what my wife faces on a regular basis and what she deals with, where it's not just, you know, kind of happy go lucky me. This is like, "Well, let's just charge the day. We'll be fine." And it's like, "Yeah, you don't understand what I'm going through." So I'm grateful for this book. Chris, I want to kind of shift our rest of our conversation. One of the things that I really just know to be true about you is you're a person who's went through some trials in life. And for me, that's what I look for in a leader and a pastor and a voice that I want to follow. Because it's like, yeah, I've walked through some trials as well. If you're willing to share, I mean, we have all the highlight reels of everybody, but maybe a trial or failure that you've went through and what you learned about that, about yourself and also about God through that.
Well, I have the luxury of looking back now that I'll be 58 this year. And what I've realized is that early on, the trials have been the same because I live on the same planet, right? But my response to them has been different the older I get. I'm a little more patient now. I'm a little more enduring. And I think society is actually asking all of us to say it now, respond to it now, fix it now. They'll even say things about issues in our culture that, you know, silence makes you complicit. and it's kind of forcing people into quick responses. And I think what I've learned, Adam, over the years is slow down, slow down. Just, you don't have to respond immediately. Collect your thoughts, spend time with the Lord. And honestly, endure. How many times is that word in scripture? Perseverance. How many times is that on a list in the Bible? And that means patient endurance. That's what perseverance is. And so it stands in stark contrast to the culture of our day that wants everything now. And even us, we want our fixes now. Slow down would be what I would tell people I've learned over the years of life and trials, that they don't change, but I've changed.
Yeah.
And in the most recent ones that I faced this past year, I kind of just came to a place of just stay steady. Honestly, that was my thought. Just stay steady. People know who you are. You've lived a life. They know who you are. Just stay steady and just let the storm around you calm. And then when everything settles, there you are still standing. And people seem to respect that more than an immediate response.
That's so good. And as a younger version of yourself, you think you would have been quicker to speak into things, react?
Always. Absolutely. That was, and I had the luxury of looking back, and that's exactly what I did. I wanted it now. And we live in this instant society anyway. I mean, if I want to know what the weather is, I can literally pick up my phone and in 2 seconds know what it is. We've gotten used to now. And God is a way more patient God than we are. And that's just not a message that everybody's waiting for you to preach. But it's
I don't know if that book's going to sell.
Of the fruit of the Spirit, you know, kindness, gentleness. I mean, but that's not, we want answers. That would be our modern day list. We want solutions. We want responses. Well, no. Slow down just a little bit. Jesus' encouragement in Matthew 6, just, you're worrying about something you don't need to worry about. And so he gives us that great encouragement near the end of chapter 6 when he says, tomorrow has enough worries of its own. Patience, slow down, seek first the kingdom. And just, man, so that's what I'm doing now. I think what has helped me the most in my trials is maturity. I'm just old enough to know this too shall pass. And I just need to hold my head high and smile, and it's going to be just fine. It's going to be all right.
What about how to remain with a soft heart? How do you not become jaded? I can remember when I was young, I'd look at older folks and I'm like, at what point do you become a grumpy old man? It just felt impossible. I'm like, just cheer up. And now, 39 years old, I ask the same question, just the total opposite. How do I end up 67 years old and still have a soft heart? Because that feels impossible.
Yeah, so one of the tragedies of getting older is that you feel like you are owed more. And anytime you lay a claim to anything, that is actually the root of all anger. So you can't get angry about something you don't feel like you had a right to. So if I have a right to quiet and there's a dog barking next door, I'm mad at my neighbor. But if I never had that right, if I didn't make a claim to that right, then I can't have that emotion. So where do you lose that claim? You do what Paul said in 1 Corinthians, and that is you die daily. He says, I die every day. Every day I lay my emotions, my desires, my rights, even my agenda. This is literally, Adam, a prayer I pray every day, and especially every Sunday. I say, Lord, I didn't build this church. I don't have to have this church. It's not my church. If you wanted somebody else to lead it, this is yours. I don't lay claim to this, because if you start grabbing hold of things that you feel like you're deserving of, you'll become that grumpy old man. You'll become that angry person. And I just think that's an unhealthy way to live. So one of the exercises that I do every day is it only takes me about 2 or 3 minutes, but I get on my knees and, Galatians chapter 2, I'm crucified with Christ. I no longer live. And I literally go through my life, my body, every part of who I am. Then I go through my day and say, Lord, it's yours. And these people are yours. And I never forget one time I got mad about somebody who was not driving the way I wanted them to drive. And I said out loud in my car by myself, nobody could hear me. I thought that was a safe place. I said, you idiot. I just said it real loud. You're just you idiot. And I heard the Holy Spirit say, that's my idiot. In other words, you just said something about someone that I deeply love. And I'm telling you, just, you know what? You know, you're right, Lord. These are the people you called me to come serve, not to complain about how they drive. And just, so it just takes, it's, you know, I just did a message at our church that where Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, they must deny themselves. No one does that today, Adam. Everybody's promoting themselves. Everyone's protecting themselves. Everyone is, we're building our personal brands. And Jesus said, no, deny yourself. Take up the cross, follow me. In other words, and the cross is the place where death took place. You know, for us today, it's jewelry. It wasn't jewelry back then. It was the place of death. So deny yourself, die, then you'll be able to follow me with a clean heart. And I think it really is a teaching that needs to come back into the church.
Yeah, that's so good. Last question I have for you. You mentioned maturity, and that's something I've seen in my own self too. We can be biblically solid, have all kinds of biblical insight and knowledge, but if we don't have the maturity aspect of things, it almost feels wasteful. Like it's like, everything else doesn't matter. Away from just years, is there anything that you found to be helpful to find maturity? What does that look like for you?
Just have a growth mindset. We have goal mindsets. Like I want to get there. And you can't focus on the there. You focus on if you'll grow, if you'll get better.
Yeah.
If you'll ask the Lord to grow you, if you'll ask others to grow you. So I still have people mentoring me. I've been doing this, you know, 38 years now, and I still go study churches, other churches, and I still have people speak into my life. And I ask them, I say, you know, what did you think about this? And I have, this is, I'm very serious. This is very active learning, growing, being mentored. It's a growth mindset. And that's what adds to your maturity. That's what one place in the New Testament says, add to your faith.
Yeah.
And then add to that this, and add to that this. Keep adding. And I think sometimes when we get older, our lives narrow and we just stop growing. And I think that the growth mindset is what helps us get to maturity.
Gosh, Chris, all this end part specifically has just been wisdom gold. Again, his newest book is called Out of the Cave. Go get a copy. Chris, a huge honor to sit down with you. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thanks, Adam.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.